we had people in the audience who are known. Yeah, in fact, a lot of them who are known in the area, yeah, who had come to see a play about their team, have to sit through that and be told, you know, that this is this kind of sectarian nonsense isn't a good thing. And so we wear that as a badge of honour, that we're bringing people in to, you know, engage with the arts.
Faith at the Fringe, a Sanctuary First podcast series. Uncovering God in the creative arts. At the biggest international arts festival in the world, Sanctuary First stops to ask, where does faith and art meet?
Faith at the Fringe podcast for 2024. Here we are. We're in St. Cuthbert's Church in Edinburgh, really enjoying the Edinburgh Festival Fringe and all the treats that it contains. And speaking of treats, we have a treat with us here, Hannah Sanderson.
It's me again, guys. Hello.
Yes, indeed. We have a treat number one with Hannah joining us for our podcast. And treat number two for this episode is our guest, Trevor Gill.
Hello.
Wonderful to have you with us, Trevor.
It's really nice to be here.
So I reckon you might be wondering, who is Trevor and why is he treat number two on the table today for our Faith at the Fringe podcast? Well, Trevor is the much loved and much respected joint artistic director, don't you know, of Bright Umbrella. Umbrella Drama Group.
But don't you know, it's very important. I try not to get too far above my station.
Yes, well, when you did impress on us that that was part of your job role, we thought, yeah, it's important that we give you your full and proper Sunday title for coming here. Yeah. So at Faith at the Fringe podcast, we enjoy delving into the conversations and discussions around faith, about how it's being expressed at the fringe, because we recognise that art so often gives us a place to wonder and ponder about life and everything, the wonderful life as we can encounter it. And does faith have a place in that wondering as well? And we come from a place where, yes, we think it is, and we're exploring that. Is there, and does it, and how does it have that place? So that is what we are doing on this podcast, friends, and we're going to be enjoying the discussions that we've got with Trevor. Trevor brings two shows with him. Both of them are really, really they both look really engaging, entertaining, and just let's not delay. Let's hear all about them, Trevor. So we've got A Farther Shore, which is a story all about Peter, a fisherman. Some of us might know Peter, fisherman from the Bible. Some of us might not. And then the other one is Dean and the Devil, and it's about addiction. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, just to set the context a little bit, Bright Umbrella is quite a new company. 2017 it was formed in Northern Ireland. Our kind of strap line is entertain, educate, challenge. And to cut a long story short, we did a lot of Shakespeare. We have a Shakespeare, we're touring at the minute with a cut-down version of Macbeth around schools in Northern Ireland, which comes with a workshop. It's about a 70-minute Macbeth, and we have various other shows. 2017 doesn't seem like a long time ago, and we never wanted a theatre, because a theatre is a big, leaky place to burn money in. But into our laps fell this wonderful, non-subscribing Presbyterian church in East Belfast, a very kind of, a very Protestant, a very loyalist area of the city, right on a peace line between loyalists and nationalists, in a very disadvantaged working class area. And we were given the opportunity to take this building on a 50-year lease. And so we run a full program there. We have a monthly comedy club called the East Laughs, as in East Belfast. And we run a program of our own productions and visiting productions. And we've recently had a grant of about just shy of £1 million from the European Union. You remember them, the European Union?
We do, fondly. Yeah.
They used to be big. And I kind of, this is their final, I think, throw of the dice in Northern Ireland for the peace process. And so that money will be used to kind of renovate the place. It's in pretty good order at the moment. We're using it as a working theatre, but you know, after we spend the money, it should be even more splendid. And so we were thinking, Ruth, you're thinking, you two are thinking to yourself, where's this going, aren't you?
No, I'm thinking, what a storyteller. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, as part of our kind of organizational development, we thought to ourselves, well, what will we do next? And of course, we thought we have to go to the Edinburgh Fringe. And so we decided we'd come to the Fringe for a week just to find out about it and that we would cope with that long line of people who are looking for money. Mm. And the money never ends with a single knot or two knots. It always ends with three knots. And so it's costing us a lot of money. But we're learning an enormous amount. And we have brought two, one person, one man. Are you allowed to say one man?
Yeah, well, is he a man?
We're both men.
Then you can. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
You have to check. So two one-man shows. One is called Dean and the Devil, which is my one-man show. And the other one is, as you said, Ruth, A Farther Shore. Dean and the Devil is about a recovering alcoholic. Am I selling it to you yet? No.
Well, not yet, but I'm waiting for the big dance number and the puppets.
It sounds woeful. It sounds like really it. But actually, it's very funny. And it's very darkly funny. And it's about a man called Alan and all the people that he meets as he travels through his life. And I play probably about a dozen different characters. Hopefully within 15 minutes or so, the audience is rooting for Alan. And will he make it? Will he not?
Is it based on anybody in particular?
You know the big compliment that I get at the end of the show is people come up to me and they say, you know, it's really brave of you, Trevor, to tell your story. And I say, whoa, I am an actor. Right. This was not written by me.
Okay.
It was written by a guy called Phil Orr. And I think there's elements of Phil's story in it. But, you know, we've all been touched by alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all know someone. Maybe that someone is us, who have struggled with addiction problems and everything that comes with that. And so there's enough of my family connections for me to be able to connect with it.
Mm-hmm.
Although, as I say, it's not my story.
And there's singing, is there? Is it Dean Martin, I see?
Yeah, well, Dean and the Devil. The Dean is Dean Martin. The Devil is the Devil drink, alcohol. And Alan's hobby is singing karaoke songs, mostly Dean Martin songs. So I get to sing three fabulous Dean Martin songs during it. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so it's a nice show. It's about an hour long. We're doing it in the Vault at Paradise Green.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very central. We're only here this week, and so we're recording this on Wednesday the 7th, and so it's my show tonight, Dean and the Devil, and then Glenn is on tomorrow night. Glenn McGivern, splendid actor, playing Peter, the apostle, fisherman, holder of the keys to heaven, the first pope. It's called A Farther Shore, but he plays it on a really down-to-earth human level with an Ulster Scots accent.
That sounds fascinating.
can you
give us a wee hint as to what that accent sounds like?
Well, it's very, very deep, and it's almost Scottish, but it's really from Ballymena, and it drawls a bit. And it's got words that you would recognise, like scandard, so Glenn plays it lovely.
Brilliant.
And the reason why we picked that, you know, Peter to be played, and it tells the story of Peter meeting Jesus, and it tells the story of we start on the shores of Joppa,
mm-hmm.
and Peter is waiting to take a boat, and he is Simon Bar-Jonah. A lot of people don't actually connect with the fact that he has a big connection with Jonah, who was also a sailor and a fisherman, presumably, and who got, of course, got swallowed by a big fish. And so he's reflecting on all of that and his meetings with Jesus, and the fact that Jonah was going in the wrong direction, that's what got him into trouble. It's got a fabulous soundtrack to it. The soundtrack really drives it along. And it's got a fabulous set of animations by an award-winning animator called Fergus Washalo Kelly, who's probably not that well-known on this side of the water, but is certainly very well-known in Ireland. And so these illustrations come up behind Glenn as he's doing it. We get lovely feedback on it. We get people coming out saying, you know, I'm not a religious person. I don't really do the Bible or anything else, but we love that because it's such a human story, and it takes a story that we remember maybe from Sunday school or from when we were kids, and it really enlivens it and brings it to life.
So the question is, why Peter? Why did you choose Peter for that one?
Well, again, this is a show that was written not by us. It was written by a Methodist minister called David Campton. And David is a writer and a poet, and was actually he was one of the people who founded Bedlam Theatre here in, or was certainly one of the early performers there when he was an actor and producer. He wrote it when he was on sabbatical in America, and he's always been fascinated. Some of us say, possibly unhealthily, with the story of Jonah. And this was a development of the story of Jonah. And he'd suddenly realized that, hang on, there's a big connection between Peter and Jonah. And everybody goes, really?
I must admit, I hadn't tweaked that. And so
it's part of his Jonah fixation. It's not about Jonah. No. I mean, Jonah features, but so I think that's where it's come from. So it's not our, it's a script that is performed by Glenn. And we didn't write it as such, but I guess it's true to say that we've brought a lot to it. I directed it, and the concept is ours, but it's David's script. And we will have David in the audience, and Sally, his wife, on Saturday, which we're really looking forward to. Good. Well, you've seen it loads of times, but...
Fantastic. So when he is going through the life of Peter, are there myths that you debunk about Peter? You know, I'm just thinking, sometimes we hear the stories about people in the Bible, for those of us that were brought up in church, not all of us are, but we have this kind of narrative in our head about characters, Peter being one of them, because he's really pretty famous as it comes to Bible folk. And if you don't know who Peter is, Peter was one of the famous folk that was with Jesus, one of his close friends. And sometimes we can pick up, you know, things about people or things about the stories that actually aren't there. So I'm really curious, are there myths, are there kind of beliefs that we've got, or the parts of Peter's life that we think are there and they're not, and the story kind of unpacks that? Or
I think one of the things that the story really does is that it makes Peter human. And actual fact, I play the kind of the voice of Jesus.
I recognized you.
Well, yeah. Thanks very much. The staff at Bread Umbrella say, you know, voice of God, you know, it's typecasting, really, you know. we bring a humanity to Jesus as well, but we certainly bring a lot of humanity to Peter. I think a lot of people, a lot of Christians, a lot of people who think about these things, if you had, they were asked to name their favorite disciple, they would say Peter. And the reason why they would say Peter is because he was flawed. Yeah. I mean, big time flawed. He had a temper on him. He was liable to do things on the whim, liable to see Jesus walking on the water and said, I'll do that. I'll get out. It takes a few steps and then suddenly thinks, not a good idea. And that story is in there. He's the guy who draws the sword in the Garden of Gethsemane and cuts off the ear of one of the so there's a lot there about if you were coming thinking, you know, having those gentle Jesus meek and mild stories in your head, and the apostles all stroking about with big halos over their head and sitting
lambs
looking
on their shoulder.
Yeah, lambs on their shoulder and all that, it ain't that. and it's, yeah, I mean that's the central core of it. I think that we've taken this man, you know, we had a lovely story. We had a father from a Catholic church on the Falls Road in Belfast, the famous Falls Road in Belfast. Martin McGill, he's called. He's a friend of Bright Umbrella. Bright Umbrella, every year we partake in this thing called Four Corners, which is a festival where all the churches in Belfast come together to put on an arts festival and a philosophy festival and so on. We always do something in it. And in fact, a farther shore, part of its genesis is with that. But Martin, we have a glider system of buses in Belfast. And we have six quarters in Belfast. Fabulous, only in Ireland, Belfast
quarters.
Divided into six quarters.
And also leading in maths as
yes,
well.
Yes, we're leading Queen's University maths department. You know, they're not at all pleased with it. Anyway, so Martin put a lot of his parishioners onto a glider on the Falls Road, arrived in East Belfast, heart of Protestant, no surrender politics. And they all came and saw a farther shore. And of course, their perspective is, or part of their perspective was, we had a big discussion afterwards, okay, question and answer session with Glenn and me as the director and so on, that Peter was, by tradition, the first pope. And of course, that the way of the holder of the keys of heaven and all of that. And it was beautiful to hear them saying, you know, there's a lot more in our show than there is in the Bible about Peter. So we don't embellish anything, but we take it and we flesh it out. And so it was lovely to hear them saying, you know, we've got an entirely new perspective on the papacy, really, I suppose, and you know, the founder of it and so on. There's always a lovely... just unplug me, by the way.
Okay, well, I do have questions, but, you know, carry on. I'll raise my hand.
Yeah, just... No, okay, fair enough. Throw money. notes, rolled up notes. There's a lovely part in it where we say, you know, if Peter left his farther shore and stepped outside of place and time and visited us in Ireland, wouldn't he go in search of Patrick? And then we bring up this film section, which is all about Peter wandering around Downpatrick, seeing all the sites that are associated with St. Patrick, with a lovely soundtrack by a wonderful professional singer called Philippa O'Hara, singing Be Thou My Vision. And so it's like this little vignette in the middle with just a drum behind her. There's no music, there's just this drum behind her. So there's this lovely little vignette. So it gets quite spiritual from time to time. You know, it gets quite... I think arts and theatre is one of those things that helps us from time to time catch a glimpse of God and helps us kind of see, you know, what's behind the veil. I think there have been, I think, moments in that show where people have said to us, you know, I really got something there for a brief moment about maybe connections that can't be expressed in words or can't be expressed in... you know, in logic. And that pleases us, of course, because if theatre is about anything, it's about, that's what it's about. You know, we all remember those shows that we've gone to in that moment when the hairs in the back of our neck stood up. And we went, wow, you know. So there you go. Now, if people out there are not booking tickets now, I don't know what else.
I mean, come on,
you know.
You've got songs, you've got... accents, you've got the full works there.
There's a few jokes in it as well.
It wasn't a gorgeous term though that Trevor just used there about going behind the veil and how theatre takes you into that place and gives you a glimpse of God. I really liked what you were saying there, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. Just about your heart with that, and is that what comes through? Is that part of your driving force in what you're doing?
We're not. I mean, you know, it's these words. You know, we're for want of a better word, we're a secular professional theatre company, and we're not. When you know, okay, we're based in a church, and we have very good relationships with the people there. The congregation is down to four people. God bless them. They made a fabulous decision to give it over to community use. Otherwise, lock it up, watch it rot. You know.
So Bright Umbrella's not a kind of, as it were, Christian theatre company. Yeah.
No, not at all.
So why be drawn to A Farther Shore as a production?
A Farther Shore, I think, is probably the one show that we do. I'm trying to think. Is there another one? But that has overtly religious themes. Overtly religious themes in it. Because it was written by David Campton, and because he is a friend of the company, and because we wanted to do something for Four Corners. Having said that, you know, I am a person of faith. I sometimes think I'm the strangest Christian on the planet. That's actually what I'm going for.
Well, Ruth's already got the title, so you're going to have to wrestle her for it.
Well, I will. I'll arm wrestle Ruth later for it.
Did you tell him that I lift weights? It's not a good. It's not a good challenge to take.
So if you're a person of faith, you know, just kind of taking Ruth's question, not taking outside of these performances in general, for you, where does your spirituality touch your creativity?
That's a very good question. I think it kind of it imbues it, really. It underpins it. It is, you know, I read a lot of artistic director, don't you know? But I read a lot of
Garfield.
I knew
Snoopy, where we were going there.
On poetry when I get the moment, and no one should let, you know, Mary Oliver shouldn't feature in a, you know, I should be talking about Wordsworth, really, shouldn't I? And
not at all.
Shakespeare and so on. Well, I've been into Mary Oliver lately, who says, well, here's a secret to life for you. Notice, celebrate, talk about it. And so theatre in those little moments, can illuminate. I mean, Shakespeare said that drama, theatre, was about holding a mirror up to nature. Those moments when we see ourselves on stage, and, you know, reflected in Iago or in Hamlet or in, you know, I don't know, Jez Butterworth's Jerusalem or whatever, we see ourselves, there we are, that's me, that's, you know. And if that's not God, in a way, you know, imbuing an art form to help us understand who we are, it's kind of the way I look at it, kind of thing. I know that sounds a bit
I'm hearing
old hippie.
You've moved the question, and I wonder, therefore, would this be the better question? Where does spirituality, creativity, and truth combine? Because I think what you've said there is, you said that art gives us an opportunity to hold a mirror. You talked previously about seeing behind the veil. Both of those feel like they're moving in a direction about revealing truth. Would that be a core kind of foundation to a drive that you might have for being interested in a piece?
Yes, yeah. 100%. That's very good. And thank you for that, because I hadn't really, you've put it in a better way than I could ever have put it. Yeah.
And seen.
And cut. It has to be truthful. And if it isn't truthful, and if you aren't truthful as an actor, the audience will see right through you. And so you have to be bringing truth to it. Glenn embodies Peter. I swear Glenn is Peter when he's for that hour. I try to embody Alan. And we see glimpses of each other, glimpses of truth. So as I get older, I used to be very certain about things, and I'm not so certain anymore.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I don't know.
I describe it like this. I say, when I was younger, I was stood in a broom cupboard, and I could touch all the walls, and I was very comfortable with that. And now I'm alone screaming in a field. And I'm not quite sure whether that's a good direction of travel or not, but it's definitely a direction of travel, that's for sure.
But there's a metaphor for theatre, you know. Is this play in a broom cupboard, or is it standing in a field screaming? And do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah, no, that's lovely.
So going to switching to Alan, which is also the name of one of my cats.
Does does Ed drink at all?
Well, he is definitely the stockier of the two. His brother Steve is a little slimmer. So I can hear, obviously, I can hear this journey with Peter. Mm. And you've told us that you're performing as Alan and you are a person of faith. Where does the faith narrative come into Alan's story?
I think it's quite big, but not in a structural kind of Christian kind of, there are, you know, faith rules or mm-hmm. a particular kind of program that he's following. But I think someone described to me alcohol like a big monster waiting in a dark place to jump out and eat you.
Oh, gosh.
And you have to stay away from it. And that is a very much a spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. And if you look at things like the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for example, or any of the STEP programs, they're all underpinned by a belief that there's something outside you that you can't really, that you have to buy into. And you can call it God, or you can call it nature, or you can call it the universe, or you can call it what you want. But there's something out there that you need to buy into and understand that sometimes you can't control things and you have to let go and just let it happen and be who you are. There's a lot of that in Alan. And there's a lot of that as his means to recovery. You know, a lot of him realizing that he has to let go, that he can't control everything. There's that lovely AA thought. What is it? Then the lovely prayer. God, give me the strength to.
Know, I'm sorry.
Well, it's God, give me the strength to change the things that
I can't change. Oh, yeah, and the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Things that I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference is a big AA thought. So all of that is in Alan's story. There's a lot more humor, I think, probably in Alan's story than there is in Peter's story. That's no criticism. But there's a lot of very black kind of tongue-in-cheek humor in it, you know, and as his life kind of slowly disintegrates and he meets people who try to help him but really are not doing a very good job of it. Meets a therapist who tries to teach him CBT and cognitive behavioral therapy and talks about Marcus Aurelius, and Alan tells her that he thought that Marcus Aurelius played left back for Brazil when they won the World Cup.
I think it's a brand of hearing aid, isn't
it? I think it probably is. Yeah. So it's, you know, there's a lot of kind of wry humor.
So what are people, what are you, I mean, we ask this and every artist says, oh, it's for the viewer to translate into their own interpretation. But without falling into that trap, what are you... As the giver of this piece, what are you hoping the people in the room would take from it?
People have been very moved by it. Particularly people who are struggling themselves or who have relatives that are struggling. We talked about truth earlier.
Mm.
A lot of them see a lot of truth in it. And it gives them the opportunity, I think, to realize that they're not alone and that some of this stuff is understood. So that's been that's just been wonderful, you know. I think sometimes I'm not trying to change anybody. We are not trying to change anybody with the program, with the show. We're just saying, well, here it is. This is all of these things happened to someone somewhere along the line. Here they are, make of it what you will. It's a very redemptive story in the end. I love the Coen brothers, you know, the filmmakers, because none of their films end with a kind of tied up bow Hollywood conclusion and it all ended happy. Holland's story doesn't end happily ever after. It just kind of peters out.
Look with what
him.
You did there.
Hey! Hey, thank you.
I'm here all week.
Tip your waiter.
Can't believe we
try
said
the
that
fish. So I And it ends with Alan saying, "It's, you know something, it's all right. Tis, it's okay." And then he sings a Dean Martin song, walks off.
Okay, so we're buying tickets. And the other thing I'm hearing from you is about taking life and making it really relatable.
Yeah.
You know, whether that is living a life in the recovery community and dealing with addictions, or actually whether it's exploring an ancient life of Peter.
Yes.
And everything that he was then involved in. It sounds as though you've got this wonderful gift of being able to bring these aspects of life and make them relatable in that sense for people. And what I was hoping that we would have time to discuss as well is you mentioned that a farther shore happened at the Four Corners Festival, mm-hmm. and that you're right on the line of peace, physically, mm-hmm. that you're on the line of peace. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, you know, what I'm wondering is that part of your hope with a farther shore as well, that it does bring a message of peace somehow, somewhere in amongst there. I know you talked mm-hmm. about the feedback mm-hmm. that you got from some of the people mm-hmm. that came to see it. Mm. How is that translating into Edinburgh, where it's going to be shown?
Good question. I said earlier on that our strapline, the Bright Umbrella strapline, is entertain, educate, challenge. And part of the challenge is that we do, you know, theatre for social change, darling, is sometimes what it's called. But we do address a lot of stuff around sectarianism, for example, and we've done some pretty punchy stuff. Where we have, you know, addressed sectarianism. We did a piece called Unholy War, which is set in the 1920s in East Belfast, when basically the entire Catholic population were burned out. And it has left a little enclave called the Short Strand. Mm-hmm. And that's bang on the line where we are. Mm-hmm. On our side of the road, two doors away from us, there's a kind of loyalist Protestant drinking club. And across the road, all the street signs are in Irish. I mean, literally a minute away. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the most contentious and still very contentious peace lines in Belfast. During the marching season, the army arrive in force and they construct a physical fence down the middle of the road, which separates our church and all the buildings on our side, from all the stuff on their side. So that the Orange Parade can go down that street and not get pelted and not, you know, kind of make a nuisance. It costs millions of pounds. Mm. And then they come back later that night and they dismantle it all and take it all away again until next year. Yeah. And so we see it as part of our company ethos to try and kind of nip away at that, to try and whittle away at that through art, through theatre, through... It's the reason, incidentally, why we've got the money that we have from the European Union, because we got it from a peace program, because the arts and our building is a unifying thing. You know, we get people from all right across. The thing that is really worrying us at the minute, and we're discussing how we can approach it and what we can do about it, is the racist stuff that's going on in Belfast and the attacks that there have been, including in our area. Where loyalism in particular, they've just changed the enemy. Mm-hmm. You know, they've said, well, the enemy used to be, I mean, goodness, I don't have to teach Scotland any of this. you know, the enemy used to be the left footers, and now it's people of colour.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, as we read the news, you know, that we're here kind of lovey-dovey in this kind of, you know, festival of culture, where, you know, the International Festival's theme is, you know, rituals that unite us. And yet across the UK, we're seeing, you know, violence explode in lots of major urban environments, that the opposite of that, you know, rituals that divide us. It's quite a contrast.
It is quite a contrast, and I think one of the things that kind of potentially could annoy me, if anything annoyed me, is that we're all hiding in this little artistic silo, darling, and it's all good, and it's all mwah, mwah, yeah, how are you? I haven't seen you for years. Did you catch my Othello? It was wonderful.
Did you throw it?
Yes. I mean, no, saw that. You know, that's the antithesis of what Bright Umbrella is about. Mm. We are down and dirty. And if we can get in the audience's faces and make them think, that's what we will do. Mm. On these two shows, I think that we're presenting at the festival, people go away and think, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Mm. And so now we're kind of concerned. I don't know, we can't change the world, you know. We're a theatre company, for goodness sake, you know. But you know, we can bring something to it. And so we're discussing how to get together with other theatre companies that we know are friends, and do something that will celebrate diversity, mm-hmm. equity, interdependence, and actually maybe, you see, the problem is the people that you want in the room, they're not the people that you get in the room.
Absolutely.
And we have done, you might want to unplug me in a minute, actually.
No, it's okay.
But we did this.
I'll do a secret signal.
Sam Robinson, my friend and co-author, wrote a play called One Saturday Before the War. And it's the story of how our local football club, Glentoran FC, brought home the first ever European football trophy, won by a British or Irish team. Brought it home to East Belfast, yeah, having beaten the likes of Hertha Berlin and Prague teams and all these, you know, this bunch of blokes from the shipyard, basically, which is where our area is, East Belfast. It's in the shipyard where they built the Titanic, et cetera, et cetera. And it was right on the eve of World War One, and it was literally months before World War One broke out. And a few months later, they find themselves, and all the Glentoran supporters find themselves dying in their thousands at the Somme.
Goodness.
We did a survey of the audience members who had come. 60% of them had never been to the theatre before. Because they're all football fans. And there are a couple of scenes in that, because there were only two Catholics in the Glentoran team. And there are a couple of blinding rows in the play, which really get down to it, you know, about, you know, the Isle Bitterness and stuff, you know. Eventually, the characters have to unite because they're about to go over the top. Mm. Do you know at the Battle of the Somme, actually, a lot of the Orange men that were there actually put their sashes on before they went over the top? Remarkable stuff. And we have that in the play, you know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, one of the characters puts his sash on before he goes out and goes over the top. Anyway. We had people in the audience who are known, yeah, in fact, a lot of them who are known in the area, yeah, who had come to see a play about their team, have to sit through that and be told, you know, that this is this kind of sectarian nonsense isn't a good thing. And so we wear that as a badge of honour, that we're bringing people in to, you know, engage with the arts. You're being asked some very difficult questions, you know.
So it sounds like you are unafraid to grasp the nettle. That's what I'm hearing from you, both the shows that you've brought to the fringe and the ones that you're involved with as well. It's really in the gritty parts of life that so often are glossed over. Mm-hmm. But what I'm hearing from you, what I'm really loving, is that you're boldly and bravely taking hold of them and saying we don't want to gloss over these because these are parts of life.
We're just a bit daft, Ruth.
Love
you
it.
Know, we just like we've no sense, really. I mean, a whole lot of people have said this. You're not going to put that on the stage, are you? And Sam and I say, oh, I.
I think that is the perfect place to land, to be honest. That actually, there is an element within bravery and boldness that requires that element of just being daft, as you said. And what a joy is brought through that as well. Hannah, do you have a quick takeaway from our chat with Trevor?
Well, I think probably I feel kind of... just, you know, I want to say, you know, I feel that God's put a blessing on you to be able to be in a place of favor, because actually you're going out there and you're putting on a stage hard truths, you know, and those people could, you know, pick up a bottle and chuck it at you. I'm sure you've encountered something similar.
Yeah.
You know, but what your company must have a character that people allow you to speak to them. Because you are only allowed to be a bringer of truth if people see in you a character of, of, of righteousness, of hope, and of good intention. And so that must be on you and on your company. And so from that point of view, you know, thank you and well done for being that point of the spear or the umbrella, as the case may be.
Indeed.
And you've said a couple of times, you know, we're just a theatre company. We can't change the world. And you don't believe that because you wouldn't be doing it if you did.
Corner and I in mine. You know, let's all sing the chorus together as we fade out, you know.
Exactly.
A lot of it's rooted in humour as well.
Yeah.
You can get away with enormous amounts if it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on another level, it's not funny at all, really.
Exactly. many a true thing said in jest.
Exactly.
Yeah, we are thankful that you have been in our corner today with us, Trevor.
Lovely to see you. What a beautiful church.
Gorgeous. It is. You're right. It's a super setting. And it's just been great to hear from you and just been really thought-provoking. Yeah. Friends, I hope you have found it thought-provoking as well. And if you want to come along and see Trevor as Alan or indeed Glenn as Peter, then we will pop the description so that you can click the link and come along and see the shows that Trevor has been talking to us about. And we just pray blessings on you, Trevor, and thank you for everything that you have shared with us today that you are doing. And from Hannah and I, thank you for joining us.